In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. Thank you everybody for attending. النهاردة هنبقى المحاضرة على الاكتئاب, depression for children. Where Dr. Maret Bastaras will be the one that's actually helping us to understand a little bit more about it. Okay?
Hello. So firstly, before I start with the PowerPoint, I just want to show everyone a video of a teenager talking about her battle with depression. And I want you to keep in mind when you're listening to the video, I want you to take out all of the stereotypes, all of the things that you've heard about depression and suicide and how it doesn't affect our church, okay? Everything that people have told you that it doesn't exist in Coptic Orthodoxy, okay, I want you to remove that completely. This girl that's going to talk, she's actually a Christian girl, okay, and she gives her perspective of how she battled with depression. And unfortunately, suicide is a big, big risk factor and a big problem when it comes to depression. And I want you to look at depression as a medical issue. It is a medical condition, okay, so just like we look at high cholesterol, high blood pressure, heart disease, I want you to look at depression with the same sort of glasses on. I want you to look at it and think about it and think about how serious it could be, okay, and think about how many children in the world it is affecting today, and that slowly, slowly, like every other disease, it infiltrates every other society, okay, and it's out of our control. But today we're going to try and make it a little bit more in our control. So we're going to play a video first, and I'm going to keep referring to this girl as we go on. And I want you just to listen to her story and to listen to how she battled it and how she overcame depression, okay? And try and think how it could apply to me and how I could help a child who's in need. All right, so we'll listen to her story first and then we'll start with the talk.
When I was growing up, our whole family was shaken by the suicidal death of my teenage cousin. I was never aware of any warning signs or anything that would explain his desperate decision. The unknown, the lonelies, the guilt enhanced the darkness of the grief and loss. Some of you are experiencing that trigger as we discuss this. And just a reminder that you can call and pray to our prayer partners anytime. In a week where suicide is unexpectedly in the headlines, we're eager to expel the myths and inform as many as we can in the hope of preventing further tragedy. Jerry Johnson talked to a young woman who came very close to becoming a statistic. We probably wouldn't have guessed that she wanted to end her life. Katie's depression was not related to her circumstances. Let's listen and learn.
Katie, I look at you and the last thing I think about is depression, looking in your face.
I mean, it's really been around my whole life, but I noticed it when I was in middle school. After being made fun of, like, day in and day out. And then I started, the suicidal thoughts all started 10th grade, 9th grade, high school.
But you have a happy family and 5 sisters.
I do. My parents have been married for 25 years. I have 5 sisters. We're all biological. We go to church every Sunday. There's not any problems at all. It's just, I feel like my depression is my lot, like, I don't have enough serotonin or something like that. I was born with it.
How did you know that you were depressed?
I wasn't smiling. I wasn't laughing. Everyone always asked, like, why are you always so sad? Why aren't you happy? And I figured, I didn't really know about it until my mom was telling me that my family has history of it. So then we took me to a counselor and they said that I had depression.
Tell me why you thought about taking your life.
One day I realized that I wasn't having fun. Like, what? Like, everyone always says life is fun, you know, they're out doing stuff. I'd rather have just been dead. Because, like, my family's really religious, and, like, I'd rather be in heaven being happy than living here. I felt like this was hell itself already.
So you formulated a plan to take your life. Tell me, what did you do?
I heard that, like, if your car was old enough, if you did the hose, you hooked it up, you put it in your car, that would actually kill you. And my car was an old car, so I hooked up the hose, I used a whole roll of duct tape, you know, put it in, started the car, and sat there for about a minute. and I just started crying because, like, the question of, will I go to heaven? Because, like, what if hell is even worse than what I am right now? I don't know how I would deal with that. So I called my mentor, Christy Buck, and she came to my house, and we just sat there and talked, and she made me take everything off my car, made me go over to her house, and I thought that was the worst, because I figured that was the lowest of lows. And then about, I'd say, 3 weeks later, it all came back, and I told myself this time I wasn't going to chicken out, because that was enough. So I went to Meijer and bought a hunting knife, and I started cutting myself in my car. And I'm not good with pain, so I was just a hot mess, and it wasn't good. And for some reason, I had the urge to turn on the radio. And so I was losing a lot of blood, and I was weak, and I went to go push on the radio, and my finger slipped over to the one that I don't normally listen to, and it was a Christian station. And the song from Matthew West, Strong Enough, was playing. And, like, if you ever listen to that song, it's talking about how you don't have to be strong enough to deal with it. You can talk to other people. And I realized that maybe it's okay that I'm not strong enough to be here, and I don't want to, and it's okay to get help.
If you were talking to a parent that had a son or daughter that was depressed, what would you say to them?
They need to talk to the kid and let them know that it's okay that they're feeling this. You can't make them feel like it's not normal, because it is. Like, so many people have depression problems, and it's okay to talk about it. And the parents need to go do research on it themselves. Because if they don't have an understanding of what the kid is feeling like, they're not going to be sympathetic. They're not going to try to understand what they feel like.
Do you feel privileged that you were not a suicide statistic?
I feel like everything happens for a reason, and that I can share this so that other people, like, if parents sitting there thinking right now, thinking that maybe their kid is suicidal, that right now they will go and talk to them so that maybe my pain can save someone else some pain too.
Katie said, parents need to understand.
Okay, so that was a bit of a confronting video, and she talks about how serious her depression got and how quickly she spiraled down into wanting to take her own life. And unfortunately, with depression, if it's not tackled early, things like this could happen, okay? So again, I want you to look at it in this PowerPoint. I want you to look at depression as a medical condition, okay? It's a medical condition. It's nothing less. It's not something that can be ignored, okay? It's not something that we can't talk about, because unfortunately it's so prevalent in our society, so prevalent among our kids and among our teenagers, that unfortunately it's going to infiltrate our society eventually, our culture, okay? And it has, it's starting to creep. And unfortunately we see so many celebrities nowadays take their own life who seem to be completely normal. And, you know, our friends and our kids, they all look up to these celebrities, and they all watch the news. They all listen to the news and watch these issues and ask themselves the question, you know, am I going through the same thing? And it starts to become a negative thing, having all these sort of media attention on depression. Okay, so we need to know how to ask the question. We need to know what sort of signs and symptoms to look out for, what sort of things to ask, okay, if we're suspecting it, and who we should be talking to in these situations. All right? So just a few statistics to start. Depression is the most common psychiatric illness, okay? It is a mental disorder. It is a medical condition. Okay, it is the most common, okay? Among both children and adults, it is the most common. 1 in 4 young people today are living with a mental disorder, okay? Whether it be depression or something else, 1 in 4, 25% of young people today, okay? 9% of people aged between 16 and 24 have high to very high psychological distress. Okay, whether that's because of the pressure in society nowadays or not, I don't know, but that's a big figure, 9%. And in 18 to 24 year olds, depression is the highest, has the highest prevalence, okay, among all mental disorders. And in this range, age group specifically, okay, that's who have the highest prevalence. And finally, this is the worst one, in 15 to 24 year olds, suicide is actually the leading cause of death, okay? So let's ask, what is depression? Does anybody know? I want it to be sort of interactive, so give me your ideas. All right, so 3 things, okay? Firstly, they have to have a depressed mood, okay, so sadness, but we'll talk about the difference between general sadness and grief and depression. Secondly, they get a decreased sort of interest in usually enjoyable activities. They get less of pleasure out of what they normally enjoy. If they like reading, they'll stop reading because they don't like it anymore. If they like watching TV, they'll stop doing it. If they like spending time with their friends, they'll just stop. And that's probably the most unusual thing. And finally, they have to have 3 or more of the following signs: weight loss or weight gain, increased or decreased sleep, a change in the level of psychomotor activity, so things like agitation, things like emotions that are usually unusual to them, so anger. They have fatigue, feelings of guilt or worthlessness, inability to concentrate. And I think the final one was suicidal thoughts. Okay? So, so the final one is suicidal thoughts. So they have to have the first two, and then they'll get 3 or more of the following signs. So 3 or more of those little dot points. And usually these symptoms have to last for about 2 weeks or more for it to be diagnosed as depression. Okay? So this is actually at the diagnosis criteria out of a psychological sort of handbook. So what are the effects of depression? So depression affects the body, the mood and the thoughts. And in turn, that affects how a person eats, sleeps, feels and thinks. Okay? So basically it affects how a person functions in general. So can you see how debilitating this disease is? Can you see how hard it is once you're dragged down by depression, how hard it would be to come back out on your own? Do we see how much it would tie someone down if they were actually depressed? So how? Okay, so how are all of these signs coming about because of a simple change in mood or a simple loss or something that's happened in their life that's caused them to be depressed? How does this happen? So there are these things in the brain called neurotransmitters, okay, and what they are is they're chemicals that send messages to different parts of the brain, and then that basically controls how the entire brain functions. Okay, so we can't function without these neurotransmitters. There are 3 I want to talk about when it comes to depression. Serotonin, which is what the girl talked about in the video. She had heard of it, but I don't think she knew very much about it. Basically, serotonin is the neurotransmitter that's responsible for how you sleep, your aggression, your eating habits, and your mood. Okay? So there are heaps of studies out there about the causes of depression, and because no one can actually go in and cut the brain open and examine it while someone's acutely depressed, these are all hypotheses. Okay? So whether it is a genetic thing that causes a lack in these neurotransmitters that's causing the depression, that could be one cause, or it could be the other way around. Okay? It could be an environmental cause, and then that causes the depression, and then because you've got the depression, you get a decrease in all of these neurotransmitters, and you get all these signs and symptoms. Okay? So it's an either or. It could be genetic or it could be environmental. We'll talk about the causes as well. But look at these neurotransmitters and think about how it could be genetic and how, if it's not genetic, having depression could cause all these signs and symptoms. So the second one is norepinephrine, and that one's responsible for recognizing and responding to stress. So someone who's depressed and has a decrease in this neurotransmitter is unable to deal with their current emotions on their own, okay? They're getting a lack of this neurotransmitter released in the brain, and they're no longer able to deal with the current stress. They're no longer able to tackle it on their own. They'll do risk-taking things, stupid things, behaviours that are unnatural to them, because they're unable to recognise the stress involved with that, okay, or the consequences in it. Yeah. And the last one is dopamine, and that one is the one that's responsible for our drive to seek out rewards and getting a sense of pleasure of things. So people with depression have this thing called anhedonia, which we spoke about earlier. It's basically this lack of interest in usually pleasurable activities. Okay, things that they normally like to do, they are no longer doing it. And that's because of this neurotransmitter here. It is no longer being released in the amount that it's supposed to be released, and then they don't get this drive to seek out a reward, this drive to get pleasure from something that they normally like. Okay? So we're just tying everything up now. We briefly spoke about the causes, but what we need to understand with depression is it could be caused by a range of things, okay? And the fact that depression can persist for so long, it could be sort of new things coming into play while the depression is here, and new things causing it to continue on, okay? So the onset, the maintenance, and basically getting depression again and again throughout your life all depends on a multitude of factors, okay? It's not just one thing that causes it. We can't tie it down to one specific cause, and we can't ever say about a child that this is exactly what's causing his depression, because we need to consider everything surrounding that child, okay? And it's an interaction between, like we said, genetic and environmental things. So biological things that the kid is born with, things that the adult is born with, things that are passed down genetically, and interacting with environmental influences. Okay, so they both very strongly influence the depression itself, okay, and they affect how it continues, it affects how long it stays, and it affects if it comes back, okay? So a few biological things. We said depression. Unfortunately, when depression is in the family, so if two or three people in the family tree have had depression previously, unfortunately, that's already a risk factor for the child having the depression, okay? So when in the hospital, we always ask, if we're suspecting that someone's depressed, we always ask, is there anyone else in the family that's depressed? Do you have a family history of depression? And it always sounds really odd to the child, but genetically there's a link, okay? And whether it's because of the neurotransmitters that we spoke about, or whether it's because they're just surrounded by this environment, we don't know, but it could be one or the other, okay? So there is a link with family history and depression, as well as anxiety, as well as any other mental disorder. You have to think about the link, okay? So unfortunately, because nobody likes to talk about depression, nobody ever knows their family history. Nobody ever knows that their uncle or their aunt or their grandma has had depression or anxiety. So it's important to talk about it, okay? Because this will sort of map out for future generations, okay? And it'll give us an indication of what's going to happen and what's going on and what could happen, okay? So genetics. And it could be due to an underlying other mental disorder. So things like bipolar and psychosis. So psychosis, I'm talking about things like schizophrenia, okay? So these two medical conditions, mental disorders specifically, are very highly associated with depression. So with bipolar, what you get, people always think it's a split personality. It sort of is, but you get like people going from one really depressed mood, okay, so they're really, really low for about 6 months to a year, okay, and then they might be normal on medications, and then suddenly they'll go up to this manic stage, okay, where their thoughts are completely out of control and everything is just so much faster than usual, okay, so they spiral between these two extremes, okay, and the only middle ground is when they're controlled with medication. So unfortunately, if the child or the adolescent has an underlying mental disorder that we haven't investigated, okay, an underlying bipolar, which also runs in the family, okay? We never really notice when they're really on a high because we just say, oh, they just got too much energy. But then they get really depressed and then you're like, oh, something's wrong but I don't know, okay? They could actually have an underlying mental disorder. Psychosis, things like schizophrenia. So if you know, schizophrenics are known to hear voices, okay? These voices aren't controlled. They can't control it. They can't control whose voice they hear, and they can't control what they hear, okay? So you can imagine if they're always hearing something negative, how it could spiral down into a depression, okay? If they're constantly hearing voices about how inadequate they are and how terrible they are at something, unfortunately these voices, because they can't go away without medication, they're going to spiral down into a depression. So you need to consider these things when you have a kid, either in Sunday school or at home. When you've got a kid there and you're like, oh, he could be depressed, she could be depressed, I'm not sure, I should seek an opinion, you should be considering these other alternatives, okay? So it could be any of these reasons as well. Okay, so in specifically children and depression, okay? So they present with sort of five things. In children, it could present a little differently, especially children who haven't hit puberty yet, okay? Usually after they hit puberty, they're considered an adult, and we treat them as an adult. But before that, they're considered children. So five things. You get a general irritability, okay? So they're generally really annoyed, get agitated really easily, things that are out of the ordinary, okay? Secondly, which is a big one, is social withdrawal, okay, and isolation from school friends, from people at home, okay? They generally like to be alone, they do things on their own, okay? That's a big indicator that something might be wrong. Even if you're not suspecting a depression, social withdrawal is not healthy for anything or anyone, okay? So social withdrawal in itself, unless the child has an underlying autism, okay, social withdrawal in a normally normal child is not normal, okay? So once your child starts socially withdraw, or you notice in the Sunday school class that a child is slowly stepping away from the clan, not participating with activities, although they usually do, that's something that would indicate that you need to look further into it. Thirdly, they get an impaired performance at school. So we said that depression causes a lack of concentration, okay? So a lack of concentration paired with this social withdrawal would cause an impaired performance at school. And I'm talking about not impaired from the start, or not impaired as we think, okay, from the start of their schooling life. I'm talking about they're normally okay, and then all of a sudden they start to drop, and they start to plummet down academically, okay? They're things you need to consider. So look at things like social withdrawal with the lack of concentration, and look at those reasons, and it could be an underlying depression that's causing their lack of performance at school. The anhedonia, which is that lack of interest or lack of interest in pleasurable activities normally, that's not normally present in children, okay? So they still do the things that they like to do. If they like to play with Legos, they'll do it. If they like to read, they'll do it. It's not usually present in kids. So it's important when you're looking at a child and you're sort of assessing whether they've got depression or not, to say, oh, they don't have this lack of interest, it can't be depression, okay? With children, it's a little different. And lastly, there's this thing called a reactive affect. So an affect is sort of like how you present yourself, okay? So an adult with depression or an adolescent with depression, they sort of have a flat affect. So no real emotion displayed on their face. When you start to make them laugh, they won't laugh. When you try to make them cry, they won't cry. There's really nothing going on, okay? It's like there's a shield and they're not going to show you what's going on inside. With children, it's different. Okay, with children they might seem sad, but the moment you sort of give them something to make them happy, they'll laugh. Okay, they'll smile. They have this reactivity of their affect. Okay, so their face sort of displays the emotion that they're experiencing as you try and change it. Alright, with adolescents you don't normally get that. It's usually quite flat. Okay? So how does depression impact when it goes unnoticed? And then they start to hit puberty, okay? They start to hit puberty and then you sort of think that's when it's going to get worse. So during your teenage years, that's the time where you develop a sense of identity, okay? If you're sort of withdrawing socially, you become isolated, okay? And if you're isolated, you start to involve yourself in risk-taking behaviours. Okay, and this comes especially around the teenage years. Okay, when they've already been depressed, nobody's spoken about it, nobody's sort of investigated, and then they hit puberty and then things just get so much worse. Okay, so risk-taking behaviours, I'm talking about things like the nasty stuff that we don't like, talking about drugs, alcohol, all that stuff that, you know, things that are out of character for that child. Okay. And finally, with all the lack of concentration, the isolation, the risk-taking behaviours, the low mood, all of that has a later effect on their career and their study. Okay? The longer they're unable to concentrate, the longer they're feeling like this, the worse it's going to get in the future. So the difference between grief and depression, so just going to skim over this. So unfortunately, people get confused between the two, but the big differentiation is persistence of depression. Okay, so they're both low moods, but depression persists. Okay, it's not just like 2 weeks after they lose someone special. It persists for longer than that. Okay, so that's a big identifying factor. And you get things like pessimism in depression. You get things like self-loathing, and you get this lack of interest in the pleasurable activities. So these are all indicators that there's something more going on. It's not just grief. Grief is a normal reaction, and if it lasts sort of 2-3 weeks, that's normal. But if it persists longer than that, that's when you start to think there's a problem. So this is the sensitive issue. So suicide, okay? And unfortunately, suicidal thoughts were a symptom of depression and could be a symptom of depression. And nobody ever likes to talk about suicide, okay? Nobody likes to talk about it. Nobody likes to confront the issue. Every time an ad comes on TV, people shut it down. It's like, no, no, this stuff doesn't happen. It happens, okay? People come into the emergency department on a daily basis with attempts at suicide. Daily basis. I'm talking about 3-4 patients a day coming in with attempted suicide. Young people, old people, teenagers. Everybody is affected and debilitated by this disease. And unfortunately, depression, if uncontrolled, it'll lead to suicidal thoughts. And who knows what it'll lead to afterwards, okay? This is an important issue. And unfortunately, we won't know unless we ask, all right? In the hospital, we ask such direct questions. And that's what I want you guys to do, okay? Direct questions. You ask questions like, you know, do you feel like killing yourself? Have you ever thought of ending it? Have you ever been so down that you thought it's just not worth living? That's the sort of direct questions I'm talking about. If it's hard for you, get someone else involved. Okay? It's an important issue and it needs to be dealt with. And I think when you've seen enough attempted suicides, you know how important it is. Okay? And you realize that it's not just everybody out there. It's not. Okay? It happens so close to home and we don't even realise. Alright? So it's very important to be aware of how to assess risk and how to deal with such issues. Okay? So look at things like their current suicidal ideations, which are all these questions that I was asking. Direct questions. Are you feeling down? Are you feeling like this isn't worth it? That's a really good question. So he asked if, you know, a lot of teenagers just throw it out there sort of to get under their parents' skin. You know, I just want to kill myself. I just want to go out and do this. How do you know the difference when it's actually real and when it's not? So unfortunately, when it's real, they won't talk about it. Okay? They'll talk about it to a doctor maybe if you push really hard, but they usually won't talk about it. Okay? And you have to consider other things. So these other three things you have to think about. You have to think about their current stresses. Okay, what's going on in their life right now that could actually mean that what they're saying is real? Okay, is it really stressful for them at home? Is it really stressful for them at school? Have they recently lost someone to suicide that they like? You know, someone at school. That's a big risk factor if someone at school has taken their own life. And then you have to look at risk factors, current risk factors, okay? Do they have an underlying mental disorder? Do they have an underlying chronic illness, okay? Are they generally in a low mood, and have they been in a low mood for such a long time? Look at, you have to look at all these things. It's not just what they're saying and how you think they're feeling. You have to look at everything surrounding them, okay? And there are also protective factors, okay? So we'll talk about protective factors. That would be the last slide. But it's all these things. When a child comes up to you and says that out of irritability, wait till everything settles down. Maybe wait a day or two and go and talk to them. Go and talk to them rationally, okay, without judgment, because sometimes they can't control it. And they'll admit to you, you know, I just said it to get under your skin. Or maybe they won't talk at all, and that's when you think maybe I should take them to someone else. Okay, so usually when it's a serious issue and when you should be really concerned is when they don't talk about it at all. That's usually the big sort of exclamation mark. Exactly. Yeah. Again, look at persistence, okay? And look at, you know, all their current stresses. Oh, we have another question. It's along the same line, so I'll answer it as well. So the question is, my boy is 9. He gets angry at little things. He throws stuff and he says, I want to kill myself. I don't know if he means it or not. Okay, so this is a very, very good question. Again, it depends on how long it's been ongoing for, okay? So the fact that he's 9 is almost makes it less likely and more reassuring that he won't carry something out, okay? But the fact that he's 9 is also, should be something that you look at very carefully, because after 9 comes puberty, okay? Not too soon after. Not too long after, sorry. So you have to tackle this issue early, okay, so that when puberty comes, it doesn't just spiral down further. And then when puberty comes, unfortunately, males, being a male is a risk factor in itself for suicide, okay, because males are more irrational than females and they're more gutsy than females. So if they want to carry something out, they'll carry it out and they're not scared. Whereas women sort of, they attempt, but they never really carry out the full amount, okay. So being a male in itself is a risk factor. So being 9, it's important to tackle these things early. If it's been ongoing for a while, okay, depression is usually treated by talking treatments and medication. Okay, so it's very important, either one or the other, but usually in combination is the best sort of way to tackle it. So talking, I know it sounds like it won't help, but you'd be surprised. Okay, talking to a psychologist, a psychiatrist if you want someone higher and someone to prescribe medication, counselor if you don't have access to these doctors, okay, or just the GP, a non-judgmental GP, a GP that will sit there and listen to them, okay, they can do wonders and they can prescribe the medication. If your child is uncomfortable talking to you as a parent, okay, and you feel like he's at risk to himself, you need to tell someone, whether that's a bonna, whether that's the servant that's responsible for their Sunday school class, someone needs to be involved in their care. Okay, so it's better to tackle these things earlier. And you don't know, there could be something else underlying it that's causing this depression, causing this erratic behaviour. Okay, so you need to rule out everything and try and hone in on the depression and tackle it early before they hit puberty and things get worse. All right? Of course. 100%. Yeah. And it's so hard to gather all this information. Oh, sorry. So he's saying, do you think it's a good starting point for parents to go to the GP and ask these questions first and sort of gather a right mindset before tackling it themselves? And I absolutely. If not a GP, talk to a counsellor yourself, okay, and get their opinion and get how they would manage it and what you should be looking out for as well, because it's very hard to remember all this information in sort of half an hour. And it's easy to look up things and it's like, no, no, none of this applies. Okay, I'm actually going to hand out a piece of paper with resources, things that you can look up, websites that you can go to that are actually good and credible resources. Okay, looking up these things and understanding what is involved in depression, understanding what you could find, is the first modality. So that you have to understand it completely first. You have to go in completely non-judgmental and completely understanding, and completely understanding that this is a medical condition and it's debilitating and it's going to affect their child like any other medical condition, even worse. Okay, so you need to put that, have that mindset before going. Okay, it's very important. Exactly, yeah. It's good to sort of understand what's normal, what's not, and what to look out for, and what to sort of be vigilant about. You know, when one thing happens, this is when I need to really seek help. And if they don't want to see anyone, you can't really force that on them, okay? As much, the only thing you can do, all right, as a friend, as a parent, as a sister, as a brother, the only thing you can do is be supportive, okay? Be there to listen. If that means taking them out every 2 days, distracting them by doing something completely different, if that means just literally sitting in their room while they read, okay, just being there, that's a protective factor, okay? That'll protect them in ways that you won't understand. Just being there and being constantly there, being someone to constantly be there to talk to without judgment, without bringing up the topic, okay? By just being there for them, if you've already tried and you've tried and tried, you're just there, okay? And slowly hinting that there are so many positive things about life and writing up distracting activities and doing things with them, that's enough to let them know that you're there to listen, okay? And that they can trust and confide in you, okay? Yeah. About 3 or 4 cases that come into the hospital on a daily basis, and if the root cause of all of them is actually depression. So about 50%, it's depression. It's known, it's diagnosed, they're on treatment, and they're not coping with the treatment, or they're not compliant. Okay. The other 50%, it's a range between a few things. So underlying mental disorder, okay, we get a lot of sort of people with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, okay, like we mentioned. A lot of it is grief, okay, and they just don't know how to deal with the grief. It's sort of, they have a massive loss in their life and all of a sudden they don't know what to do because they've never experienced that before, and that's when you start to counsel them, okay? And unfortunately, about 5 to 10% of the time, the child is just in puberty, really angry currently, really annoyed at life because things aren't going, you know, things are changing and it's just stressful. And the parents are dragging them into emergency, okay? So that's only 5 to 10%. So the rest, the 90%, are things that need to be investigated. Done? Yeah. So that's it. But if you have any questions, just let me know. If you want the rest of this PowerPoint, maybe get it off Mimi or Sylvia. Yeah. So I'll give it to one of them and they can hand it out if you want. I'll just hand out the... These are just a list of websites and credible resources that you can go to for questions. One of them is actually an adolescent link, so it's for adolescents, for teenagers to go on and ask questions and look at the forum and all of that and try and see other teenagers that are dealing with the same sort of thing. So like I said, if you have any other questions, I'm around church all the time, so just come up and ask.
Thanks, Loretta. Just to remind everybody, we have these talks every 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks' time, Abuna Mark is giving the talk, and he's doing a talk about how to teach children better time management and setting boundaries for themselves. We know that this is a major issue with electronics and all sorts of other stuff. So Abuna Mark will give the talk in 2 weeks. It's always in the Arabic church, 10:45 to 11:30, so 45 minutes. And if you're interested, one parent suggested that we can do a WhatsApp group so that we can give you the announcements of the new topics every week, every 2 weeks. So if you are, I'll have a piece of paper here. You can write your mobile number and we can create a WhatsApp group for announcing the event. The talks definitely are on the website, but I'm talking about advertising the program for the next few weeks. We'll make sure that we'll put it on the church website as well. Okay, let's stand up and say Our Father together quickly.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thine will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For Jesus Christ our Lord, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.